justices on both sides of yesterday's decision cited the landmark 1954 school desegregation case, Brown versus Board of Education. They came to very different conclusions, obviously. Here to help us understand the history and legacy of that decision is NPR senior correspondent Juan Williams. Juan wrote a biography of Thurgood Marshall, who was the lead lawyer for the NAACP Legal Defense Fund in the Brown case. And good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
So how did the opposite sides each square their opinions with the Brown decision?
Renee, you have to recall that Brown really was the end of the 1896 Supreme Court decision in Plessy v. Ferguson that said separate but equal was permissible under the Constitution. Brown said that, in fact, separating children on the basis of their skin color, their race, was unconstitutional, a violation of their 14th Amendment rights to equal treatment. So yesterday what you had was the majority saying that, according to the Brown decision, you shouldn't judge children on the basis of their race and you shouldn't assign them to schools on the basis of the race of their race. The minority said, wait a second, Brown was intended to remedy the damage done by legal segregation in this country, and you're now turning it on its head by suggesting that you can't take those steps because of the need to have a colorblind constitution. In essence, they said that was self-defeating and hypocritical. So what you have here is now a real decision, I think, that suggests that even looking back at Brown, a time when, you know, 1954, Renee, 17 states had laws requiring segregation and just the culture allowed it in many other school districts. Now you have Chief Justice Roberts saying that really assigning the principle, the principle that should guide all decisions here is color blindness, and saying essentially that Brown was about integration. And while they aren't opposed to integration, they are opposed to anything that would have children judged simply on the basis of skin color.
Talk to us about how we got to this point.
Well, you know, it's really interesting. I mean, it's a matter of a historical timeline. You have Brown in 54. In 55, the court then said that the school district should go to the federal courts and take time. All deliberate speed was the phrase they used in the Brown 2 decision. And then, of course, this year, 2007, is 50 years after President Eisenhower sent the 101st Airborne to Little Rock, Arkansas, to defend the rights of 9 black children to attend Central High School. And then reality is, though, that for the first 10 years after Brown in 54, about 90%+ of black students remained in thoroughly segregated schools. It wasn't until the 1970s that you really start to see massive integration of students in America, and that's largely because the federal government threatened to cut school aid to any segregated school. But then in the mid-70s, you had a key decision, Milliken v. Bradley, that said the suburban areas, in this case outside Detroit, had no obligation to work with big city schools to achieve school integration. Of course, most of the white children were out in the suburbs. Even today, big cities and the largest school districts in the country are often dominated by minority children. And then you come into a series of decisions in the 90s in Oklahoma City, Atlanta, Kansas City, where federal judges said, you know, these residential segregation patterns are too much, and why are we putting the onus on public schools to achieve integration when, in fact, the adults aren't doing the job?
Given that the two desegregation plans in question are similar to many others around the country, what do you think will be the practical effects of the court's latest ruling?
That's a fascinating question, Renee, because, the reality is that today most white children in American schools go to schools that are about 80% white. Most black children are in schools that are about two-thirds black. The most segregated group of students in America are Latino students, especially in the southwestern part of the country. So what you see in terms of, you know, what can be done at this point is efforts to look at, for example, magnet schools, look at school choice programs, voucher programs, charter schools, and even in some school districts to look at programs that would be based on income so that you have income integration. And the way they do that, Renee, is they look at who gets school lunch vouchers, you know, the right to be free school lunches, and say we don't want a too large a concentration of poor students in any one place.
So those are the tools that they'll be looking at.
Yes, and that's the hope, that those plans would be approved by this court, even as it has gone about saying that colorblindness has to be the principle, your 14th Amendment rights.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Renee.
NPR's senior correspondent, Juan Williams.